Learning by Proxy with Vivek Srinivasan. Hello, everyone. I'm going to be speaking today with Aidan Caron from EarthDay.org. He's somebody who's currently the director of End Plastic at EarthDay.org, and we have the privilege of having his company, and I wanted to speak a little bit about plastics and, you know, what it's doing to the world. So glad to have you here, Aidan.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for making the time. So I wanted to just dive straight in into, you know, what is plastics? So to get started with, what are plastics?
Yeah, so at the very base level, plastic is fossil fuels. So plastic is petroleum. Plastics, it's also basically a conglomerate or not a conglomerate, but just a combination of a bunch of different chemicals in order to make it have its different purposes, whether those purposes are flexibility or the wrappers that you use see on food. It just completely depends on what the use is. So there is no one definition of plastic just because there's so many different types. That's kind of the biggest issue we see with plastic is while it starts as this kind of just a petroleum thing that was started as Bakelite in the 1950s, people started adding more and more to it, and the market just took it, and now we have no idea how to regulate it, and we have no idea how to follow where it ends up. And that means we have no clean way to recycle it or no clean way to reuse it at its current state.
So it's interesting that you bring up the question of recycling because, you know, even a Coke bottle seems to have three different types of plastics. The cap is a different plastic. The wraparound is a different plastic. And so it becomes very difficult to recycle it. But why is it that plastics don't decompose?
So plastics do break down, but the issue is they don't completely break down into their component parts. The research on it is still relatively new. We all assumed it was pretty inert up until 15 years ago. We didn't think that it was breaking down into microscopic pieces, but people started to notice in the water there's something called microplastics, so less than 5 millimeters across. And then from there, it breaks down farther into nanoplastics, which are microscopic pieces you can't see. And that's kind of where the bigger issues come from. That means we can't really follow them easily, and it's hard to register how much plastic there truly is in water or in the air. It becoming so small also allows it to kind of enter into our bodies, which is a concern. And with our lack of understanding of how little this plastic can get, we really don't know how dangerous it is.
So as you say, my plastics break down, but they break down into microplastics and nanoplastics. What happens to this broken down plastic once it breaks down? What happens with microplastics? Where do they go?
Yeah, so one of the best descriptions I was given recently by a scientist from Australia, who heard it from a scientist in Norway, who I'm sure heard it from some scientists somewhere else in the world, was plastic is basically the spaghetti, and then the sauce is the chemical additives. And when it starts to break down, those two combine, so it becomes a spaghetti and meatball, just whole, and it breaks down into smaller and smaller pieces. And the issue with those smaller and smaller pieces is they're easily transferable in the air. So those nanoplastics are able to get picked up by the wind. They fall into dust where you're breathing it in. They also leak into our waterways really easily. They do that via the air or via recycling systems and waste systems we currently have. So plastics become smaller and does that breaking down in UV light and also due to mechanical weathering, similar to how a rock breaks down. And with that, it enters the water streams via runoff, the same way any other chemicals are entering into our water streams. The bigger issue is we don't have a good way of tracking those microplastics once they enter into the water streams, and we are still unsure of the research on how much of that is being uptaken by plants and uptaken by the animals that we are consuming. We are pretty positive about it being prevalent in most of the fish in the world. We see it when we cut open a fish, but those are just kind of the macroplastics that you can see. We haven't really analyzed how much microplastic is in the tissues of the fish, as well as the muscle fibers of the fish. And the issue with that is things, once you eat them, bioaccumulate. So you can have a plankton that's going to eat a small little piece of plastic. Fish comes by, eats 20 plankton. A whale comes by, eats 30 fish. And then from there, you just have a whole bunch of plastic within that whale. And then, as humans being at the top of the food chain or the top of the food web in most systems, we are consuming the most amount of plastic in the end.
So you have this microplastic, it enters our food system and therefore it enters our body. What happens once it enters our body?
Yeah, so the evidence that's coming out lately, and it's way above my pay grade. I'm not a qualified scientist. I have a bachelor's degree in biology, but I do not do the actual studies. But we do look at the most recent studies that have come out. The Endocrine Society is one we rely on pretty heavily. What we're seeing is hormone disruption caused by the microplastics and their additives. And that hormone disruption can lead to increases in cancer, increases in rates of ADHD, increases in, or well, I guess it's decreases in fertility rates in males, and then lowering of sperm quality in males, as well as other issues, including early onset puberty for those most affected and those most exposed. And then with the early onset puberty, it leads to a whole host of other issues, a whole host of other developmental issues for those children becoming adults down the road.
Right. So you've written this article on babies and plastics that was published. Now, there is this problem of the plastic having invaded our bodies itself through the food system. What happens with babies?
Yeah, so with the babies, that's kind of where we're seeing the issues with lowering sperm quality. So over the past 80 years, there has been a trend of a decrease in sperm quality. So, and it kind of coincides directly with the development and the proliferation of plastic in our world. And so those lowering of sperm quality leads to developmental issues for people down the road, as well as just a decrease in fertility for most people.
All right. And I mean, I was j just recently reading an article where it mentioned that, they found microplastics in placenta. So this is essentially, the baby being fed with, essentially what's within the mother, and, it's finding its way that early into the baby's life.
Yeah, and that's what's also leading to that early onset puberty I mentioned earlier, and that increased cancer rates. The endocrine disruption is the largest issue. So the endocrine disruption is related to the hormonal issues. And when your hormones are out of whack and your endocrine system kind of controls your body's development, that can cause issues such as cancer. There's also evidence that it can lead to dementia down the road, an increase in dementia rates, which we've also seen a trend upwards. But the science on that is still relatively new. A researcher out of Rhode Island, University of Rhode Island, I believe, published it back in September of 2023, and she's running studies again this year and then hopes to republish those studies soon.
So in our lives, we find plastics all around us. Our water comes in plastic bottles, our food comes in plastic, everything in the supermarket is wrapped up in plastic. Even your sofa, foam tends to be made of plastic, which is another source of microfibers inside homes. So, it seems like we are taking microplastics, putting it inside the food system, and then wrapping it up in even more plastic and then, sending it out to be consumed. So, what is the solution here?
So that's the hard part. And I can't give a direct, like, this is going to cover it all. This is our one solution. That, once again, is above my pay grade. But what I can suggest is that we kind of look backwards in some ways. So we know that the issues that are arising from plastic are from just the amount of chemicals we have in plastic. So we either need to better regulate the chemicals going into plastics, Or we could also look at going back towards more reuse systems. So it wasn't that long ago that soda companies were using glass bottles. They were able to refill them, they were able to wash them out, sterilize them, send them back out. People were able to return them for a deposit. I'm not sure. Here in DC, we don't have that system anymore. I know some parts of the US do, and some parts of the world still do, but it's just not as prevalent as it should be. There's also looking at packaging materials. So 50% of all plastic waste in the world is single-use plastic. And with that single-use plastic, it's not necessary most of the time. And from just that 50% being single-use plastic, 50% of that 50% is plastic packaging. So if we look at alternatives to plastic packaging, such as cardboard, which is more highly recyclable, or in some cases, aluminum, which has proven to have higher recycling rates than plastic as well. There are some issues with both of those that need to be worked out, and that is why people are working towards a global plastics treaty. The next set of negotiations is taking place between April 23rd and April 29th of this year in Ottawa, Canada. We are on the fourth round of negotiations. There's supposed to be five rounds of negotiations in total. And so by the end of this year, we're hoping to have a comprehensive treaty covering the full life cycle of plastic. And hopefully, with that, come with some solutions to the plastic problem. That global plastic treaty is a UN treaty. So everybody's coming from all over the world. Country delegates are coming from all over the world to kind of give their what they view as the best way forward for the plastic industry and the plastic problem.
So at Earth Day, I mean, in terms of the plastic problem itself, what are some of the things that you guys are doing?
Yeah, so we're doing those meta-analysis reports, such as the Babies versus Plastic report. We also do awareness campaigns throughout the year. We also implement climate education and just education in general into everything that we do. So with our Great Global Cleanup, we like to also introduce an aspect of, hey, these are other ways you can get activated. These are the things you should be concerned about in your local community. Here's ways to reach out to either your local representative or local government leader, or even going beyond that to your national government leader, state government leader, regional government leader, whoever is best suited to handle the plastic problem for your community.
Right. And so I completely agree that this is a systemic issue and this is something that has to be addressed at a system level. And legislation is probably the best way to address that rather than putting the onus or the burden on an individual. But as
Yeah.
individuals, if we want to protect ourselves, is there anything that can be done or anything that you would consider good practice?
Yeah, I mean, it's the things you hear all the time. So just, bring a reusable bag with you when you go to the grocery store. Try to avoid plastic in your daily life. If you can, avoid drinking out of as many plastic water bottles as possible. I know that's not possible in some parts of the world, but if it can be avoided, try to avoid it because I think the most recent study showed like 250 million particles of microplastic in a single bottle of water, which just sounds
Absurd.
terrifying, absurd, and mystifying in reality. So it's little things like that, and then just try to put pressure onto these companies when they put these things out. Like when Coca-Cola, let's say, says, "Hey, recycle me," be like, "Well, I'm not going to buy your product because it's not truly recyclable until you switch back to these glass bottles that we know you can make and you do still do in some parts of the world." It's difficult to avoid plastic altogether, but just making little steps like that can be really helpful. One of the other things that we see that works really well for people is to go into their homes and figure out how much plastic they're actually doing and just seeing, like, I'm using 400 pieces of plastic a week in order to live my life. How can I cut that down? It's just, if you don't know how much you're using, there's no way to move forward from it.
Great. I mean that's probably the least or the lowest hanging fruits that one can
Yeah.
get, right? Great. So yeah, I mean that brings me to the end of this particular podcast. Thank you so much, Aidan, for taking out the time to speak with me. And I look forward to sharing this with my audience and have more people talk more about plastic and learn more about plastic and try to eliminate it completely.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me on, and I hope you have a great Earth Month and happy Earth Day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.